I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last week's employment figures were a disappointment, with just 69,000 new jobs created in May. The official unemployment rate inched up to 8.2%, raising concerns about the weak economy and what it will take to get the millions of unemployed back to work. Those figures add to the uncertainty facing college graduates and those entering the labor market for the first time. Our guest, Carl Van Horn, is the co-author of a new study, Chasing the American Dream: Recent College Graduates and the Great Recession. It's about the challenges that young grads are experiencing landing a new job. And Carl Van Horn is the founding director of the Rutgers University John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development. And Carl Van Horn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Are you worried about or concerned about these job figures from May?
I am, because we thought that the economy was beginning to recover, just as we thought that last spring in 2011. And unfortunately, it seems to be weakening. The numbers also for the previous couple of months were revised downward, because when they get more data, the estimates are more accurate. So now the picture certainly does not look positive, not just for college graduates, but for other Americans who are unemployed and looking for a job.
Are you concerned about a return of an official recession?
No, I think that's probably a little bit too pessimistic. I think we're still in a slow recovery, but as probably many of your listeners know, you need about 150,000 jobs a month just to keep pace with graduates coming out of high school and college, and people returning to the workforce for whatever reason, veterans and so on. So 69,000 jobs, if that's really turns out to be the real number and not less than that, you know, that's not enough to really absorb all the people who need a job.
I want to ask you some questions about this study that you co-authored, Chasing the American Dream, looking at college graduates between the years of 2006 and 2011, I guess before and after the recession?
That's right. We've been at the Heldrick Center conducting national samples of students in that era, because we wanted to see what happened, what effect did the recession have. And to answer a question that people might ask, why didn't we ask about 2012 graduates? It's a little early, and I think it would give a distorted picture. So we want to give people a chance to get into the labor market. So this year we added to the graduates from 2011. And during that six-year period, that's about 9 million young people entering the labor market, about 1.5 million a year. So we just wanted to see what are their experiences in this obviously difficult economic period we're having.
And how many of those are full-time employees working full-time?
Well, I think that's what's most remarkable to us and disappointing. Only about half of them have a full-time job. Now, there's another 6 or 8% who are working part-time, looking for full-time work. So the rest of them are either unemployed, or they've dropped out of the labor market entirely, or they're in graduate or professional school. That's about 1 in 5. Now, interestingly, 8 in 10 got a full-time job at some point during this period, but when we took a snapshot of where they were in April of 2012, only 50% were working full-time. So that's a pretty disappointing number.
And I'm thinking about all these talented young people that have so much to give to an economy not working.
Well, that's exactly right. These young people have worked hard. They're the cream of the crop of our society. They got into college. They did well in high school usually. They got into college. They got through college in maybe 4 or 5 or 6 years. They have a lot of hope about the future, at least when they started, probably. But now a lot of that has been dashed by the harsh realities as they try to enter the labor market and see that it really is tough, even though these students are earning less money than they would have a few years ago. They're still finding it really hard to get a toehold into what we call the college labor market. Now, one of the points I'd make just quickly is that 4 in 10 of the students who are working, you know, of that 50% I said do have a full-time job,
yep,
they told us that they were working in a job that didn't require a college degree. So they got a less education, and now they're taking a job that probably previously would have been held by a person with a high school degree or just a bit more than that. So they're working below their skill level and their education level.
Does that mean there are not enough jobs in this country for people with college degrees to be employed?
Well, that's what it means right now, but of course we're still in a very down business cycle. You know, one of the things that it's important to remember is we lost tens of millions of jobs, you know, in the recession, you know, up to 10 million or so. And we've just clawed sort of maybe 40% or 50% of the way back in terms of replacing jobs. And meanwhile, of course, the population continues to grow. So we still have this very deep hole we're trying to get out of. And these young people are entering the labor market and competing with people that have been in the labor market for more years and are more experienced. And they're also willing, the unemployed older adults, are willing to take these jobs and earn less money. So it's what I call the recession hangover. So we had this terrible experience, and now we're waking up the next morning and realizing it's still with us, and I have a big headache.
When you look at those people, those young people, college grads who are working, what kinds of jobs do they have? What did they study in college? That might give us a little snapshot about where or what someone might study when they're in college if they're interested in working, which, of course, they are.
There are a few fields that are pretty much sure bets, engineering, technology, some of the health sciences fields, to get a bachelor's degree and get a job right out of college. But when you look at all the other majors, it's harder to say, pinpoint, what is the actual ticket to success. And in fact, when we talk to employers, they tell us by and large that it's not the major as much as it is what they demonstrate that they can do. And how do you demonstrate that? Well, you demonstrate that by working part-time jobs while you're in college, gaining experience at college in leadership positions, doing an internship, proving that you actually understand how businesses work. Because just about every company, let's say, that sells a service, and we are a service economy, has salespeople, right? And you can major in all kinds of fields and know how to learn how to do sales and be good at being a salesperson. So it's not that we're sort of training people to fit in a little round hole, and as long as we do that, it'll work. It's unfortunately a bit more complicated than that.
What was your first job out of college?
My first job out of college was I worked for the president of the University of Pittsburgh,
really?
Where I went to school. And this was many, many, 40 years ago. And he wanted a young person on his staff to help, I think, interpret what was going on in that very turbulent time.
Wow, that's quite a job out of college.
I was very lucky, and then I went on to graduate school shortly after that to get my PhD.
Another finding from this study is that the median salary for today's recent college graduates is $28,000.
Right, and that to put that in context, the average person graduates from a college with about $20,000 to $25,000 in debt. Right. Now, they don't have to pay it off right away. They can take 10, 15 years or even more to pay off their debt. But they already owe a lot of money. And that's just for the students that are working full-time. That would be their full-time. But again, we have half of them that are working part-time or not working at all. So there are many of these students that are earning much, much less than that.
Are then these young graduates, are they not just frustrated, but disbelieving that they're going to have if not just a good future, a future that might be better than their parents?
Well, that's a question we asked them, and only about 16% said that they thought their generation would do better than the one before them. And a little less than half said they thought they'd do better than their parents. So they're not optimistic, and this is unfortunate because we expect young people to be optimistic. Mm-hmm. They really have every reason to be. And by the way, I don't think that viewpoint is one that'll hold for the long run, but one is totally understands why they feel this way now. If you look at our data, you can see they're struggling. They owe a lot of money. They're not getting full-time jobs. Many of these jobs are temporary, and they're working below their skill level, so of course they're going to be disappointed.
Looking at some of the reporting that you did how young people finance their college costs, for 56% of them, a loan from another source, such as a student loan from the government. That explains, I guess, this, what, 20,000 or so student loan debt?
Right. And, of course, if you went to a private school, their average debt is about 25,000. If they go to a public, it's more like 18 or 19. That's right. The national numbers are close to that. You know, when you look at the national numbers are collected by the large government agencies, about two-thirds of students borrow money, some money, while they're in college. So the good news is we have improved access to higher education greatly over the last 10 to 15 years. The bad news is the price of higher education continues to rise. State governments are lowering their support for higher education, and the only elastic, as we call, option for people is to borrow money.
We hear, and have heard over generations, that it's important not just to finish high school, but to get a college degree or some kind of advanced degree or some kind of certificate or skill that you can then apply once you get into the world of work. Does that still hold?
Absolutely. The unemployment rate for a person with a college degree is right now in the United States 3.9%, compared to the national average of 8.2%. So you're more than twice as likely to have a job. Your earnings are likely to be about $1 million more over the lifetime for the average person with just a bachelor's degree versus a person who didn't get one. And you're also likely to have a job that is less physically demanding and punishing and dangerous than if you don't, you know, if you don't have a college degree. So there's lots of reasons, in addition to, of course, what I should always mention, since I am a college professor.
Indeed.
The other joys that you get out of being in college that are not just economic, but from an economic standpoint, it's definitely still a very good investment. What we're seeing here, however, is really a slow takeoff, you know, at graduation, which again is very disappointing. Mm-hmm. And they're not entering the labor market, the college labor market, at the rapid pace they had hoped for, or of course we would like them to be able to do.
About a minute or so before our first break here, but then looking at these figures and even looking at the economy, do you see this as a short-term challenge facing college graduates and also facing the country as well?
Well, I think there's two ways to think about that. The first is I think it will take us several more years to work our way out of this recession. And so for that period of time, these people are going to struggle as well as other unemployed Americans. The other point I make is that for the cohort of students that are graduating in this six-year period and perhaps in the next few years, it's going to be difficult because they're competing for a smaller number of opportunities. They're competing with each other, and as we point out in our research, they're earning less on average than people who entered the economy just a few years before. And so their salary history will show that they're earning less money, and it's hard to catch up once you start at a lower wage or salary than those who started, let's say, in the early part of this 21st century.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Also, I do want to open up the lines. We want to hear from the college graduates in our audience. So those people entering the workforce, did that college degree pan out for you? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. What kind of work are you doing? What kind of work are you looking for? Again, 1-888-477-WHYY. Carl Van Horn is our guest, director of the Rutgers University John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development, and the center recently published a report, Chasing the American Dream, Recent College Graduates and the Great Recession. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Food waste disposers grind up your food scraps and send them through the sewer system to Philadelphia's wastewater treatment plants, where they're converted into renewable energy and fertilizer. More information at philadelphiastreets.com. InSinkErator supports WHYY.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. This new hospital is now open. It was designed with all single-patient rooms and innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a rapid-response emergency room and physicians from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Now open. More at princetonhcs.org.
Hey everybody, Jad here. I wanted to let you know that Radiolab is coming soon to Philadelphia for a live show. We're calling it In the Dark, and it's all about darkness and light, seeing, believing. It's going to be a super fun night because we've got the comedian Dimitri Martin coming with us, the singer-songwriter Tao Nguyen, and the amazing dance troupe Palabolas. They'll all be there. We'll be there June 29th at the Academy of Music. You can get tickets at radiolab.org.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with available 16-speaker THX surround sound and independent suspension. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. What kind of jobs are out there for new college graduates? How has the job market changed since the depths of the Great Recession back in 2008? Who is getting jobs? Who is not? And why? And we're talking about all of this with Carl Van Horn from Rutgers University, talking about a study just released and co-authored by our guest called Chasing the American Dream, Recent College Graduates and the Great Recession. Looks like we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Carl, I know some of the people that we're talking about having a son who's 30 years old and watching him and his friends, frankly, navigate the world of work. And also looking at some of the research that you did, and I think sometimes as parents or even grandparents, you know, we worry about the next generation. But I do hear and see little hints of hope and optimism and even excitement out there. Do you glean that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, they're resilient. And one of the things that's important to point out is that one of the lessons that I think this cohort of students graduating into this tough time have learned while they're in college is they had better get some work experience. Mm-hmm. Of course, many of them work because they need to, but also they're working and they're being more careful in planning their academic career. So we found that over 80% of students work at least part-time while they're in college, and 25% work full-time. So they're getting used to the workplace. The images of students who are going off and snowboarding in Colorado for 3 years are really distortions. You know, they're fun for movies, but they really don't have much to do with the reality of college students. And, of course, I teach at a public university where we get lots and lots of students whose parents did not go to college, and they are very hardworking, dedicated young people. So it's not that they're not working hard and they're being resilient. They're looking for different ways to be successful, but there's not much they can do about demand in the economy, right? All they can do is sort of do the best they can to prepare themselves and try to get into that college labor market.
And what I get from your report is obviously the importance of experience if you want to get into the world of work, and also a shout out to internships.
Right. I mean, one of the things we found was that students who do internships earn, once they graduate, 15% more than people who didn't. A lot of businesses are becoming to make that the sine qua non of success. They want to kick the tires, if you will, to see if the student really is going to fit into their corporation. And so this is a very good path. The other thing that students told us was that while they didn't regret going to college, they most overwhelmingly thought it was a good idea. They had some, in 2020 hindsight, better thoughts about what they might have done while they were in college. And so many told us they would have selected a different major, so they should have thought about that some more, and done more internships. And they also would have done some more classes in quantitative methods, perhaps in economics or business. And so those are things that lessons learned. Now, for them, it's too late to go back and do their college career over again. But these are lessons that hopefully get communicated to their brothers and sisters and friends that are younger than they are, as well as by colleges and universities.
Well, Carl, let me get some callers in on the conversation. We have, looks like David from Reading joining us on Radio Times. And
yeah.
David, go ahead, you're on the air.
My question really revolves around the fact that there are jobs available. They're just not necessarily in kind of the standard degrees that kids are graduating with. There are plenty of jobs in engineering, math, and science that are available, pay well, and we have to import labor to use. So it's relatively disappointing for me to hear that we think kids are going to stuff that they can get jobs in when they're really not. And I know you were speaking to that a little bit a minute ago, but I just don't feel like they're doing their part in terms of making sure that they are employable when they finish.
Well, fair enough, David, and that's the disconnect that I think is part of our employment picture. Let me give Carl Van Horn a chance to weigh in on that. Carl, is he on to something?
Well, there are a couple of points. I mean, first of all, it is true that there are often more openings in, as I said before, in the engineering, science, technology, and math area. But just we can't just will students to do that if they don't have the skills in those areas. And not only that, but a lot of times those decisions are things that are made when they're in junior high school and high school. In other words, if they don't prepare in mathematics sufficiently to be successful in college in those kinds of majors, it's very hard for them, if not impossible, to turn around and say, well, I guess now I should have done that. So, yes, we do in American higher education do our best to try to encourage young people to go into those fields. But not everybody wants to, and not everybody could be successful, even if they wanted to.
David, thanks for the call. Let me see what Danielle from Millville, New Jersey has to say. And Danielle, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and say that I just graduated from Temple with my master's in social work, and I think, from what I know right now, every one of the master's level social workers that I graduated with had found a job.
Well,
so congratulations
fantastic.
To them.
Indeed.
Many of us are very underpaid, but we're still working and we're happy with what we do.
And Danielle, just since you raised it, I'm curious about with a master's in social work, what do you get paid?
Well, right now I'm working for a nonprofit doing counseling with domestic violence victims. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to be paid a lot, but right now I'm getting paid about $33,000 a year. Oh. I'm not planning on staying here long term, but for right now I'm getting counseling experience, which is extremely vital for me.
And how do you feel about your future?
Oh, optimistic. I can't tell you. I'm so excited that I graduated. I may not be getting paid what I want to get paid, but right now I'm so happy. And I know things are going to be fine. Things are going to be okay.
Well, I appreciate the call, and congratulations on graduating and getting a master's degree as well. Carl Van Horn, your thoughts?
Well, congratulations also. And I think that the story tells a lot, which is that, yes, there are fields outside science, technology, and mathematics where people have a passion and they want to go into that field. Social work is certainly one of them, and but the caller got a master's degree, and I think that's a lesson that many students are learning, that if they want to get into a profession, they need to get additional education, and that, in our sample, 20% of the students were already in graduate school, and another 40% said they're going to go to graduate school. But one of the things that's important, just as a cautionary note, is those decisions need to be made very carefully, because graduate school often incurs, if not always, additional debt and opportunity costs. So in other words, you're going to have to borrow more money, and obviously you're not going to be working probably full-time, although some do, and that's going to cost you money as well. And you may wind up at the end of that rainbow where there isn't actually a pot of gold. Now, this caller wasn't looking for a pot of gold. She was looking for something she really cared about and wanted to do. And she probably had her eyes wide open. But we certainly meet graduate students who don't have quite that clear a vision of what this is all about.
But interestingly, she said that her fellow graduates, most of them have found jobs. Now, maybe they're not paying what they believe they deserve or need, but nonetheless, they're finding employment.
Yeah, that's terrific. And that has been a field that has done pretty well. Last year's class here at the Blaustein School, our public policy class, almost every student had a job before they left. There are fields where it wasn't a large class, but you know they all had jobs, and you can hear that story in many professional schools. But I'm talking really about the person with the bachelor's degree, and in the past they would have had a much easier time getting into a job and spending some time learning on the job. That's less common today than it was even 10 years ago.
Danielle, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. We are talking about the employment picture for those recent college graduates, and Carl Van Horn, our guest, he's the founding director of the Rutgers University John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development, co-author of this new report we've been talking about, Chasing the American Dream, Recent College Graduates and the Great Recession, and again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Carl, though, do you think that colleges can do more, not just directing their students into fields where they believe that they can get employment, but even just sort of helping connect them, hook them up with either future employers or internships or ways of getting experience that they can then turn into gainful employment?
Yes, I certainly think it's the responsibility of colleges and universities to help young people make these decisions. I mean, one of the things I always think about is a 19-year-old, if they're at most large universities, is asked to make a pretty important decision, which is which major among 120 majors or 170 majors are they going to take? And then that has lots of implications. They also have to make decisions along with their parents and family members about borrowing money. Those are things where I think as adults and as institutions, we have an absolute responsibility to help people make very good decisions and also to make them more aware of what the labor market's like, not to disappoint them, but to understand what is it that you really need to know to be successful. And employers tell us over and over again, it's less about the major in many cases than it is about, as I said before, what can you do? The basic skills they're interested in, you know, research and communicating and writing, problem solving and communicating verbally and knowing how to work as a professional and so on. Those are skills that can be acquired in just about any major, but it's the responsibility of the student and of the college and university to make sure that they have gathered those skills and they know how to talk about them, if you will, sell themselves when they go into the labor market to prove to an employer they can actually hit the ground running and be successful.
Let me get to Casey from Springfield to join our conversation. Casey, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yes. Hi, he had discussed how interns make more money than those who don't do internships, but I've seen an exaltation of actual first entry-level jobs. So how are these kids who have to work through college and after college supposed to get that first paying job?
When you're saying that paying job has turned out to be an unpaid internship, is that what you're saying, Casey?
Absolutely.
Well, Carl, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, most internships are not unpaid in the sense that, in fact, some cases the students pay academic credit to get the internship. But if a student is offered an unpaid internship after he or she graduates, again, you need to get some advice and do some careful thinking about whether that is an opportunity or an exploitation. And you can't generalize about that. You have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. Certain sectors, let's say in the arts especially, tend to be in the unpaid internship category, but yet that's often the path to getting into that business, that profession. Others, they're much more commonly paid. So it depends on the circumstances, and what I always tell people is if they do take that unpaid internship and they have any sense that it's really just, a gopher position where they're not learning anything, then get out right away and go on to something else. It's not a prison. It's something that you have to assess carefully.
With your eyes wide open. Casey, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Carl, looking at those graduates who do have jobs, are they getting benefits from their employer? Are they getting health benefits, for instance?
Yes, most of the ones that have full-time jobs are getting health benefits from their employer, and it's the part-time workers that tend not to get those. So there are benefits attached to many of these jobs, but again, we have this sort of two-tier experience, which I'm describing, those that are really being successful, they're getting a full-time job, they're making a fair amount of money. In fact, the students who had a job in the college labor market were making in the mid-$30,000s as opposed to the mid-$20,000s. So they were making a lot more money, and they were getting benefits. But unfortunately, a large number of them are not getting into that labor market. They may be working two part-time jobs in a retail store and also volunteering and doing other kinds of things. Now, these are good things to get experience.
Sure.
But they're certainly not the students thought they were going to get when they got that baccalaureate degree.
Well, and I'm thinking about that student debt that's hanging over their heads. I mean, that's gotta focus the mind, as we say.
It certainly does, and that's why many students take jobs that are below their skill level because they need to pay back eventually. They also are in many cases not financially independent of their parents. About 1 in 4 said they'd move back with their parents. That may be a mixed blessing for both, or maybe a joyful experience. It depends. But certainly, if they remain living with their parents and depending on them financially, you know, that's difficult for both parties. The parents may also be struggling economically. They probably help support their child to go through college. And someone in that family may also be unemployed. So it can have a negative ripple effect.
Let me see what looks like Sarah from Lehigh Valley has to say. And Sarah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question, and I'm just going to put a little background in here first. I've been working for the past 2 years for the Associate Dean of Student Services at the community college I go to, and we've been very specifically looking at the senior year of high school and how it can be utilized to benefit a student entering into college. And I know that Mr. Van Horn has said multiple times the importance of experience going into future employment. Now, I'm wondering, when is it the time to address the mindset of students entering college? You know, how is it that we are going to be able to prepare them to look for these opportunities if we don't really address that when they're in that transitional phase of high school? There is something called a learning community, which has been happening various instances across the country, and it's a program that involves high schools in the area and combined with a college or university in the area. And it does take these steps to kind of illustrate the importance of internships, of mentoring, where your mind needs to be at when looking for these opportunities while you're in college. And I'm just wondering if he thinks that plays into effect to what we're seeing with the joblessness rate.
It's a great question, Sarah. Thanks for the call. Carl Van Horn, go ahead.
Well, preparation in high school, either for work or further learning, is absolutely essential. Undoubtedly, we've made, I think, a lot of progress in this country, but not enough progress. Many students go into college not really prepared to be successful, and that's why we have a very high dropout rate in both community colleges and even in many four-year institutions. So the academic success is part of it, but it's also, if you're not successful in college, then you need to get a job. So combining experience and learning is essential at all levels. It's not just in college. It's also true in high school. There's more flexibility in the college curriculum and in the college day and week, if you will, to work in those experiences than in high school. But high schools also need to do that, more of that, and there are many reforms around the country, but not widespread, as the caller suggested, where these kinds of things are being experimented with, and we need to expand them.
And Carl, we're almost out of time here, but I'm thinking about those people working at the other end of the spectrum, those baby boomers who might be either ready to retire, thinking about retiring, or maybe can't afford to retire themselves. Is this impacting the opportunities for young people entering the workplace?
Well, there has been an exodus of the middle age and older workers from the labor market, often involuntarily, right? Mm-hmm. So they lost a job and they were not able to get back in the labor market, and so what we call the labor force participation rate is declined. So there certainly has been an exodus, but when we asked older workers how the recession was affecting them, about half of them said they changed their plans, but it divided equally between those who were going to stay longer and those that had decided to leave and take Social Security if they were eligible for it. So it's not that there's this mass exodus, and I think that is certainly going to thwart the opportunities for young and middle-aged people as they move up.
Well, Carl Van Horn, as always, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you very much, Marty.
You're welcome. Founding director of the Rutgers University's John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development, talking about a new report, Chasing the American Dream, Recent College Graduates, and the Great Recession. We'll be right back.
The Richard Stockton College of New Jersey supports WHYY and offers graduate degree programs designed to prepare graduates for professional careers in business, education, and the sciences, with convenient course schedules to help students grow academically and advance their careers. For more information, stockton.edu/grad school. That's stockton.edu/grad school. Stockton College, New Jersey's distinctive public college.
Crying. Some of us do it more often than others, and the result can be mixed. We feel better, worse, maybe embarrassed. And research tells us tears aren't just salty. They're a chemical mix that's different in men and women. On the next Voices in the Family with Dan Gottlieb, we'll talk about why we cry, when we cry, and how crying works therapeutically. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
The Mann Center supports WHYY and presents the Philadelphia Orchestra live in concert Wednesday, June 27th. It's Beethoven's Ninth Symphony featuring the Philadelphia singers and soloists from the Academy of Vocal Arts. Then on Friday, June 29th, it's the Mann Summer Tradition with the orchestra, the All Tchaikovsky Spectacular with fireworks. Tickets for the Philadelphia Orchestra live in concert at the Mann are available at manncenter.org or 215-893-1999.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We've been looking at the market for college graduates, who's getting work, who isn't. Are they making enough to pay off their student loans? And we just said goodbye to Carl Van Horn from the Rutgers University Center for Workforce Development. And now we say hello to Fawn Johnson, and she's a correspondent for National Journal. Her work focuses on education and workforce issues, and she had a recent story about all this headlined Tomorrow's Workforce. And Fawn Johnson, it's nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be with you.
Let me read your very first sentence. Preparing the future workforce will be arguably the next president's most far-reaching task. Task because what? This is what our economy is built on, having a workable workforce?
Exactly. And the other thing that I think both Mitt Romney and President Obama are keenly aware of is that the workforce is changing so fast that it's hard for even those of us who are in the workforce to keep up with it. And so what we're talking about is preparing a generation of workers that is fundamentally different than the generation that exists now or that existed previously. And that is the key to competing globally in this increasingly fast paced economic environment.
And I want to pick up on all of that, but you write about some of the barriers. One, of course, this fragile economy that we have.
Right.
The fact that a number of homeowners are, struggling with their mortgages, and that you've got employers that appear to be fearful or uncertain about hiring.
I think, yeah, that's essentially you've summed it up in a nutshell. The problem with, if you're an employer, with hiring someone is that is an investment no matter how you slice it. And so you want to take the least risk possible when you're hiring someone. And some of those choices may be to not hire at all if you feel like the person that you are looking at would be somebody that may or may not be able to fill the role. So the problem is that you wind up having people who are trying to get into the workforce. This is particularly the case with some older workers who might be technicians in technology that is becoming fast obsolete, and they are perfectly capable of learning the new technology. But if you're an employer that's in a shaky economy and you're not sure you're going to be able to make expenses, it's hard to take a risk on those kinds of workers. It's easier to come up with other ways.
Well, let me ask you about what you wrote about the difference, I guess, between President Obama and Mitt Romney, the presumptive Republican nominee for the presidency. They have very different, I guess, philosophical views about how to get and develop a workforce. How do you see their, I guess, most stark differences?
Well, and there's one key stark difference between the two of them, although they both agree on the end goal. And I think it goes right down to, it's very clear, Obama is pro-government. He would like to see more benefits going towards people who are looking for jobs, particularly displaced workers who are a little bit older. He has endorsed what they call wage insurance for a worker that might have been making, say, I'm making this up, but $80,000 as a technician, and then have to take a job at $50,000 to be able to bridge that gap as they might be changing careers. He has called for more benefits for job training to be able to allow every displaced worker to have access to the kinds of job listings and counseling that they might need. Whereas Romney is a little bit more adopting from the Bush administration, ownership society type situations. He would like to see more vouchers go to states or to individuals to seek their own training. So it's really more of a market-based approach on Romney's point of view. I don't think that it's necessarily that he wants to see less of those benefits come, but that he wants to see people that coming from the private sector.
Well, I was talking with Carl Van Horn about new graduates looking to get into the world of work, and you also have looked at these two candidates and how they view college and college preparation. Again, tell us, I guess, the differences between Obama and Mitt Romney.
Well, I think we know a lot more about Obama than we know about Mitt Romney when it comes to higher education. It's important to remember that when it comes to the federal government, particularly the White House, they don't have a ton of control about what happens in higher education. It's not as heavily regulated as public education in the lower grades. So we know that Obama has had a huge push towards community colleges. He's proposed initiatives to spend more to shore them up and to allow more enrollment. We also know that Obama has spent a lot of time trying to make college more affordable, either by increasing Pell Grants, increasing the amount of Pell Grant money that would be available, and also in he's also had this recent campaign on making sure that to keep the student loan rate for need-based students at a lower rate. With Romney, he has we know less about him. What we do know is that he is, again, a fan of the private sector, so mm-hmm. what he would like to do is he would like to allow private banks to get back into the student loan market, which is something that Obama had eliminated. And we also know that he has a few ideas about, for example, he has spoken a few kind words about for-profit colleges. This would be colleges like Kaplan, for example, that have been under fire under the current administration. And other than that, we don't really know too much more about Mitt Romney, although I think that you can expect that he would be saying the same things that Obama would say as president about making sure that more people go to college and are trained for these higher skilled jobs.
Now we're in the very beginning of the national campaign. Do you think this issue about training the next workforce, getting the kind of skills to young workers, do you think this will become an important issue in the general election?
You know, Marty, that's a really good question. I keep thinking that it will be a very important question in the upcoming election, and I keep being wrong about that. And I think part of the reason for that is that it's a couple of steps removed from the actual paycheck either paycheck or personal opinion voting issues that voters tend to be looking at. So they're either, generally they're looking at the economy, or they're looking at some of their own personal beliefs, about social issues or some of the other ways that a particular candidate might view the government. And this is an issue that everybody agrees is important. They all understand that the economy is dependent on a highly skilled workforce, one that can actually compete in an ever-changing market. Right. But I feel like and I've talked to other people who agree with me on this, it seems as though it's about one step removed from an actual way that you would check the voter box.
But that's so interesting to me because I'm not going to say most people have kids, but many people have children or have nieces and nephews. I mean, who know the kind of struggles that young people are having as they get themselves into the world of work.
Right. And what's interesting about that is I feel like particularly President Obama has really seized on that as turning it into an economic issue, particularly when it comes to the cost of college. So this isn't so much about whether college is worth it or some of the other raging questions in higher education, but it's more just about, hey, college prices have quadrupled over the last 20 years. They've gone way faster than up way faster than the actual cost of living. And that's just, as Obama might put it, that's just not cool. That doesn't work in this particular society. And I think that has really, that's helped him quite a bit. And one of the things that I was fascinated with watching over the spring was his campaign to keep student loan interest rates for those who qualify for need-based loans, Stafford loans, at a lower rate for another year. This was not a big deal of an issue. It was kind of a sleeper. There was a few student groups who were pushing at it, but once Obama seized on it, it became this huge thing, and the Republicans were forced to respond, and Mitt Romney caved almost immediately and just said, okay, I agree with you. So now the question is about how you pay for it, which is, it's almost like everyone agrees now that we need to be talking about college tuition.
But again, if we want to have a trained workforce, do we want people starting out in the world of work with a $20,000 debt, which is the
right.
median debt for college graduates?
Yeah, and I think that that's an appropriate question, but it's also appropriate to keep in mind how the college debt works. A $20,000 to $25,000 college debt is not an insurmountable barrier if you have 10 to 15 years to pay it off and you have reasonable employment after you graduate. Where you get into trouble is with people who take out those loans, then they don't graduate. So that means they don't have their degree, they're not any more employable than they were before they took out the loan, and they also don't know what resources they can go to help them repay it.
Right.
So it's a much bigger picture than just actually taking out the loans, but it's an appropriate question for people to be asking, especially when they're going into college. Do I want to be spending this amount of money for a loan for a degree that may or may not get me a job at the end of the pike?
And even if it gets you a job, you might be making 10 or 12 bucks
right.
an hour.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. It's one of the things that the Obama administration has started to look into a little bit in the for-profit sector, but not necessarily in the community college and the four-year universities, about just, you know, how much money are you going to make if you go into a technical program, for example, and spend a lot of money on it and then come out at the other end. You know, you might either drop out, which is likely in a lot of these cases with the two-year colleges, or you're not going to be making very much. Should we be looking at the actual employment figures for college graduates? It's a tough question. It's a tough public policy question, but Obama has dabbled in it a little bit, and I would expect him to go further on that.
Well,
he gets reelected.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Talking with Fawn Johnson. She's a correspondent for National Journal, and her work focuses on education and workforce issues. We have Manish from Princeton joining us on Radio Times. Manish, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question, which is around, I have not heard either president or the presidential candidate talk about the jobs that are being exported out of this country, and how are we trying to bring those back in so that these young graduates that are coming out of college have a better chance of getting a job when they come out of college?
That's a good question. Manish, Fawn, do you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, there's a couple of different places where you see that. One of the things that I think is very clear, and this is a tough issue for both candidates to be talking about, is immigration.
Yes.
There are something along the lines of half of the math, engineering, and science graduates at four-year public universities are foreign nationals, and they don't have a dedicated path towards getting them employment here in the United States. This is something that both Romney and Obama have actually acknowledged and said should not be the case. They would like to see those people have green cards immediately. That becomes a little more difficult when you start dealing with the current workforce in the United States, because that makes them a little anxious. The other problem that I think that comes from that is that you start to see, and this is something Romney has talked about, not necessarily in education, but just in general, the regulatory environment here in the United States, this is a standard Republican line, has caused employers to just decide to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I have heard from talking to employers is that particularly on the immigration front, is for bringing in foreign workers, that has become so difficult that some international companies will simply locate their facilities in other countries for the sake of being able to move some of their people around.
And these two candidates also have very different views on the DREAM Act. These are the children of illegal immigrants who were born in this country, either graduated from college, served in the military, and what their future will be.
Right. And this is an interesting one, because I think that starts to tap into a real hot emotional and not necessarily logical issue of immigration generally in the United States. Obama is a huge supporter of the DREAM Act, has tried multiple times to try and urge Congress to pass it, whereas Romney has said he would veto it. Although I'm starting to see him push back a little bit from his harder stances that he had during the primary, in the sense that he has talked a little bit about perhaps allowing some of these kids to stay in the country but not have a path towards actual citizenship. It's more of a political statement than it is an actual policy one. It's hard to see how it would work, but I am watching him walk back a little bit from those harder line statements he made.
You also write about unions, and you know, unions, so much of the news these days, Wisconsin and other states where it's become a hot political issue. As you look at unions, and again looking at these two candidates, what do you see?
Well, I think Obama has a little bit of leeway in terms of dealing with the unions that he might not have with a candidate who isn't so overtly, and Romney is very overtly anti-union. He talked when he put out his education plan about not allowing the teachers' unions, for example, to run the public school system. He's talked about allowing more states, encouraging them to have more right-to-work laws. Obama is not necessarily a friend of the unions all of the time. Certainly on free trade, he has gone against some of the things that they would like. And he also has pushed a little the teachers' unions in ways that are not terribly comfortable with them by pushing for things like teacher evaluations. Mm-hmm. However, he has stood by them on their core issues. So the core issues involve a legislation that they've wanted to get passed for as long as I've been covering it, 15 years, a car check legislation, which will basically make it easier for workers to decide they want to form a union. And he was very strong about appointing members to the National Labor Relations Board. That was a really big deal for the unions. And so I think Obama is clearly going to have their support as he goes forward. Romney is not. And he's not trying for it. He really wants to make sure that people know that he would rather see a workforce that is not involved with a lot of unions.
We have about a minute before to say goodbye. We've been focusing largely on, you know, college students, mm-hmm. and college graduates, but there's a whole other segment of the population that either has a high school degree or haven't even finished high school. And just your final thoughts about the future of employment for that segment of the population.
Well, and that's the segment of the population that is the most troubling and the one that Obama has gone the most after in terms of his push for more people in community colleges, because that is where the unemployment rate spikes. It's the employment rate for college graduates has remained in the low 5% throughout the entire recession. But where it spikes is with those either high school graduates or those without high school degrees. And that is an enormous challenge for whoever will be the next president, because those are the people who are going to need some remedial catch-up. Those are some of the people who are going to need alternative types of education, maybe part-time classes, real hands-on training, the kinds of stuff that we don't really have in the United States right now, but some are starting to develop. And that's going to be those are the people that we need to worry about in the next workforce.
Well, I thank you so much, Fawn Johnson. I know we were scrambling over the weekend to get you on the air. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
And she's a correspondent for National Journal. Her work focuses on education and workforce issues. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, and the archives. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us in this first hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.